WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome in to the College Football Wrap-Up Show here on 90.7 Capstone. We're a little early today, possibly for the first time ever. It feels like we are always on about 3 minutes late, doesn't it?
It's okay. We'll still find a way to go over.
I was going to say, that's probably why we are early.
I'm sure we will. I know this is a college football show, but I missed it. Apparently, the Packers did beat the Cowboys. I'll say it for the record, Dak sucks. I'd rather have Cooper Rush in the game, but, you know, I can mold about that later. One thing we don't have to mold about is Alabama. Alabama finally kind of gets over the hump. They have a good game. They beat Ole Miss in Oxford 30-24. But, you know, again, it was another one of those last play games that we've had this year. I mean, somebody was talking about it earlier. I mean, we easily could have lost. I mean, there's a handful of, you know, we only have two losses by a combined 4 points. But there's also a couple games in here that we easily could have lost. A&M was the last play. Mm-hmm. Texas was the last play. Ole Miss, another last play. So I'll kind of ask y'all, what was your first reaction to last night's game? Or, well, I guess it was like afternoon.
Yeah, started in the afternoon, kind of went into the evening. You know, it's hard to tell with the time change, how dark it gets so fast. I really enjoyed this game. Like, watching it, you know, I'm still stressed out. But the way that Alabama played in this game, it really surprised me, especially so I'm watching the LSU-Arkansas game earlier. LSU pulls it out, and they win by three. Essentially, like, it does knock us out of, you know, the SEC championship game. Slight chance that we did have, and you know, I don't think anybody here expects us to make the playoff, even though I saw earlier today somebody had this real crazy scenario where, like, if all these teams lose, like, multiple times, we could still get in. But, you know, I was just impressed with how the team played when they very easily could have just laid down. And, you know, early on it kind of looked like that with how easy Ole Miss was able to move the ball on us. But after, you know, we're down 17-7, and it kind of seems like, oh, this is going to be another game where, you know, we're probably going to lose. And then the defense actually, you know, stepped up. And, you know, they only give up 7 points the rest of the game after being down 17-7. And the only drive that they gave up a touchdown was, once again, where we commit a penalty. It was, I think it was 3rd and 15, 3rd and 16. And Dallas Turner has one of the biggest face masks I've ever seen. Almost took Jackson Dart's head off. But, you know, the defense really stepped up, especially in that second half, only giving up 7 points. We end up winning the game 30-24, but also penalties. On the road, we've been giving up so many penalties that have been hurting us. This game, only 5 penalties for 45 yards, which is, you know, a drastic improvement to what we were doing, you know, against LSU, Tennessee, Texas, where we just committed all these penalties all over the place. One of those penalties was the one where they went on to score to make it look like maybe we're not going to win, because that put them up 24-17, I believe, at that point. But I was just really impressed with how the team, you know, handled this game when they could have just, you know, laid down and said our season's over.
Yeah, you talk about that that huge face mask. It was so huge, in fact, that there was a Fox News article written about this. I don't understand why there's this sudden villainization of Dallas Turner. He clearly, after he gets up and he realizes what happened, he's like immediately apologetic, and I don't understand why we want to villainize the man, but it was pretty
well. You know, that was one of the worst face masks I've seen.
Helmet spins all the way around.
The only one that I can remember seeing was all the way back in 2003, where Tennessee actually did that to an Alabama player, Shad Williams, in a 5-overtime game we had against them, where it was very similar. Head goes like all the way around. I don't think his helmet actually came off in that one, but I saw a tweet after that where it was if this happens to Bryce Young, you know, they're, you know, facing felony charges. And Lane Kiffin actually retweeted that. I don't know if he deleted it. But it was like, we have seen Bryce Young get hit a very clear targeting in other games where there's no flag. So I don't know where you're drawing that conclusion from.
Yeah, that was probably one of the craziest
like penalties. I don't know. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen a face mask more egregious than that. But getting kind of back onto the game, yeah, I just kind of to echo what you said, Adam. I was almost like proud in the sense of like how Alabama played. Like, I mean, the fact that pretty much all their goals could have been. I mean, we were sitting here last week talking about if Bryce Young was going to opt out for the season, you know, and you know the fact that you know you saw him on the sidelines, I believe, after like the second drive, like have the whole offense around him screaming and kind of firing them up, and Nick Saban got in there and fired them up, and you know for you know them to still you know have that amount of intensity, amount of like heart at this point in the season when pretty much all of your preseason expectations and goals are done. It was almost like refreshing to see, because I don't know if we've seen that in a while. So yeah, good win. I mean, to get a road win is obviously really good, and just happy to be doing this at a certain point. So
yeah, I mean, you have to be happy after with any win after you know you endure two field stormings within a couple weeks. I don't know. It says this game like says a lot about Alabama, but at the same time, it really doesn't. You know, I was impressed with, you know, you go down 10-0 early in the second, and this team very easily could have laid down and quit, right? And you would almost argue that that's what we would expect, because this team has certainly not played to the expectation or the level of Alabama teams in the past. You know, it was a big thing Nick Saban was talking about after the game. He said that, quote, "They have a lot of pride in what the standard of playing at Alabama is now comparatively to maybe earlier in the season." It was a big talking point. You know, for me, it's almost kind of too little too late. These games really, in the big picture of things, don't really matter much. But I was impressed with the fact that they go down 10-0 early. They storm back. They're only down 17-14 at half when this game looked like it was headed towards disaster. It looked like things couldn't get any worse for Alabama. I was really impressed once again with Bryce Young. You know, obviously might be the most valuable player in college football. This team, I don't even want to know what this team's record is. 500, maybe less if they don't have Bryce Young. So I was really impressed with his performance.
Well, if you saw what some people were saying, how you were saying we had a couple games where we could have lost, but the actual another tweet that I saw where it was Alabama is 2 plays away from being 10-0 and 3 plays away from being 5-5. So if we don't have Bryce Young pulling off some of these miraculous plays that he's been doing all season long, very could easily be a 5-5 team, and we could be, you know, like, obviously, like right now, we're thinking, you know, the season's over. I do like how the team kind of rallied in this game. Hopefully we can see that in the next 2 regular season games and potentially a bowl game. Don't know how many players will sit out for the bowl game, but kind of reestablishing, you know, the Alabama standard for next year. That's what I kind of want to see, because we could very easily be a 5-5 team and we're sitting here like, okay, like where do we go from here? Like some other teams in the conference that are celebrating beating a 3-7 team now, I believe they are. But yeah, I'm, you know, I'm most excited to see where the team goes from here for next season.
Yeah. So the question I'll pose: how does this win change your view of Alabama? Does it do anything for you, really, to kind of elevate this team in your mind?
I mean the thing is that, like, you know, there is a point to be made of, like, you know, Alabama should kind of, like, what you said, Nick, like Alabama shouldn't have to lose twice to get this type of performance, you know, and have, like, you know, us kind of like talking about, you know, the way that Alabama usually this season has not played well is, you know, like, there's something to be said there. But, you know, I think it might, I mean, it, I think it definitely shows that this team has maybe more, like, heart than I thought it did. You know, I mean, I was seeing, you know, after, like, the Tennessee and the LSU loss, like, the players looked defeated, but, I was kind of like, well, you know, they're just kind of upset that they lost and not really upset at, you know, maybe how they played or whatever. They're just more kind of upset with the end than kind of how they got there. And, you know, I think the way that I was watching the game yesterday was, you know, seeing just kind of like the body language and seeing how they looked, you know, especially in that second half. I mean, the defense looked like they were like a prime Alabama defense to an extent. I mean, they were getting after Jackson Dart. They were, you know, disrupting the running game. They were getting a bunch of tackles for loss and they were flying around the field. And I was like, oh, you know, I mean, it shows that they still, I think, know that, you know, there's stuff to be played and, you know, you obviously play to win the game, but, you know, there's still something to uphold. And so I think maybe this game maybe changes it a little bit in the sense of just like, you know, the fact that, you know, this team does have a bunch of talent and can put together these types of games. But overall, I don't know if too much really has changed my perception of them.
Yeah, I would like to see, you know, more consistency out of the team. And, you know, it's too late now. Not going to be able to go to an SEC championship game, which is where, as Alabama fans and as a team, we always want to get to, right? And it doesn't really change anything other than, like, what you were saying. You know, I'm glad that the team showed that they're still willing to fight, even though they can't accomplish everything that they wanted. This team, to me, kind of, I know a lot of people will kind of look back at the 2019 Alabama team where, you know, we lost to LSU and we lost to Auburn and we didn't go to the playoff, and that was the first time we hadn't made the playoff, and then we showed up in the bowl game and, you know, blew out, you know, Michigan in that game. But to me, this team kind of resembles more of the 2010 Alabama team. And I don't know if y'all remember, but, you know, 2009, 14-0 national champions, and almost everybody comes back to the 2010 team. And that's probably the most talented Alabama team I had seen until maybe this year that did not win a championship. And they actually lost three games that year. You know, they lost at South Carolina, they lost at LSU, and then they lost to Auburn at home after being up 24-0. And then Cam Newton makes the miraculous comeback to win that game. And that was like the most disappointed I think I've been in a team with the talent-wise until this year. So I am still glad that we can kind of see them, you know, compete and not give up on the season. But it's kind of what we've been kind of seeing the whole year still. So,
yeah, I mean, look, I'm happy for them that they got this win, that they're, you know, not just going to give up on the season. I'm glad that they can salvage what's left of their time here at Alabama. But at the end of the day, this is an Alabama team that, you know, it was playing pretty meaningless football in early November. And it's just kind of it's too little too late for me. You know, this is a team that doesn't have really, you know, you talked about the one guy on Twitter with his crazy outcome of how they could make it. You know, this is a team that realistically has no chance to make the college football playoff. You know, the best we're looking at is a decent bowl game. So it's tough for me to really, like, get excited about a win against Ole Miss, even though it was a good win. You know, this, at the end of the day, this team's not playing for a national championship. And I think that's really what matters at Alabama. Definitely. And the fact that they're not doing that, it's a problem. Yeah. And I don't really know that I can be happy with them.
Yeah, I mean, I get that to an extent. I mean, I'm on the flip side of it, though, I mean, you know, I think that this season, especially after, you know, last week and the loss, you just kind of have to almost go game by game. And I think, like, someone like Will Anderson or somebody, Bryce Young maybe, someone said it before the game, and they were just like, you know, just kind of getting the outside noise, kind of not listening to it and taking it game by game. And you know, I think that while we can sit here and talk about maybe the disastrous season that they had, there are still, well, I guess now two games left. I mean, you know, going into yesterday, there were three games left, and two of them are SEC games, and one of them is against your biggest rival, who would love nothing more than to beat you on their way to, like, a 5-win season. Like, there is, you know, nothing that, you know, there's still a lot to play for. There's still a lot really up in the air. I mean, you know, obviously the bowl game might not mean a ton to, you know, the fans, because I would imagine Bryce Young, Will Anderson, all those guys are going to sit. But, you know, there is still something to prove and to finish at the end of the season. So I think while obviously the standards of Alabama are not, maybe not upheld this season in the sense of playing for a national championship, there still, I think, is a game-by-game standard that needs to be enforced and looked upon and said, you know, this, you know, like, this team, you should beat Ole Miss. You know, you should, you should beat Austin Peay, I guess. You know, you should beat Auburn. You know, like those types of things should still be happening, regardless of the fact that, you know, a month down the road, you're not going to be playing in a playoff game or in Atlanta. So
yeah, I think we both, like all of us, you know, we kind of expect us to win, you know, the next two games, especially Austin Peay. But then with how bad Auburn has looked, you know, most of the season, but especially looking at that Auburn game, you know, Auburn would like nothing more than to keep us from having a 10-win season. And I want to see how our team plays in that game with that on the line, because they would be the first team to not have a 10-win season, you know, in the regular season since, you know, 2010, where we still got to the 10 wins, you know, after the bowl game. But that would be – that's something that this team really needs to play for, because they don't want to be known as, you know, the first team in 12 years not to do that.
Oh, 100%. I mean, there is – literally, you know, while they may not be playing for a national championship, there is everything to play for in that Auburn game, because I would not want to go on Twitter after a hypothetical Auburn win here at Bryant-Denny Stadium. It would be an absolute cesspool. They would be hanging the hypothetical like banner in the rafters.
State champs.
Beat Alabama. Kept Alabama
from a 10-year extension.
Oh, yeah.
$80 million buyout.
You know, I don't think that, you know, right now Carnell Williams is the interim coach, and, you know, obviously he wants to win out the rest of his year to kind of show them that he should be the next head coach. I don't think he'll be the next head coach. I think he's just the placeholder for when they can get either Hugh Freeze. I know his name's been tied to it, so is Lane Kiffin, but, you know, there's a lot of, you know, pride in that Auburn team right now to try to, you know, upset, you know, their biggest rival, you know, on one of their most down years. So,
yeah, a couple more things with this game that I did want to talk about. Obviously, Eli Ricks goes down early. We don't know his status. It seemed like Nick Saban was kind of pointing towards concussion protocol after the game. We don't know his status. It's always difficult in college football to really know the status of anyone, because coaches don't have to tell you anything, which is extremely frustrating as a reporter. But you also have Jahmyr Gibbs, who they said, coach said, twisted his ankle at some point, and he didn't play like at all in the second half. He was really a non-factor in this game. So I am impressed with Alabama like getting a win over a really good Ole Miss team, basically without Jahmyr Gibbs, who's been their best receiver and back this whole season.
Yeah, you know, with us actually winning, I was able to go back and, you know, watch the game. Yeah, some of those other games, I still like go back and watch some of the LSU game after that loss, but it's a lot more difficult when you know that you lost the game. So after the win, you know, a lot easier to go back and rewatch. And I think I can tell when he twists his ankle. And, you know, I'm sure Jahmyr Gibbs, you know, he was on the sideline, still had his helmet on. I'm sure he wanted to go back in. But with the way that Jace McClellan was running in that second half, it was like, we don't need to test it right now. We'll keep him in with how he's running. You know, that was kind of the spark plug for the team, you know, with how well he was running in that second half.
Yeah, and I think, you know, kind of relaying the last kind of discussion we talked about of these games not meaning a whole lot, like, you know, to the fans, maybe not so, but to a guy like McClellan, who is looking at maybe potentially getting a starting gig next year at the running back position, kind of trying to prove himself. Some of these guys, you know, like Eli Ricks goes down, so maybe you have a couple secondary players step up. And guy, I mean, like Kendrick Waugh had a couple really good catches. And you know, guys like that who we really haven't heard maybe a ton of throughout the season, you know, these games mean a lot to them, because, you know, Jace McClellan was kind of in the same position he was last year, you know, kind of buried on the depth chart, and they brought in Jahmyr Gibbs to almost like take his spot. And, you know, I think now that he's getting the chance, and he ran really good. Obviously, he had a really good game yesterday. So, you know, for guys like that, I think it's really important to just these next couple of games, you know, even though we're probably going to come on next week and say we can't learn anything from the Austin Peay game. You know, for these guys, it really just means a lot to them just to get out there and prove that they still have the ability to make plays and they can be contributors, you know, at the end of the season and into next season.
Yeah, you know, you talked about not learning a lot from the Austin Peay game, and, you know, that's, you know, normally true with these small-level games. But I think with this one might be one of the few games like this where we can see a lot from this team with, you know, how the season's gone so far. Like, you know, we've seen it before where we start off slow against these teams. How are they going to handle it now when a lot of these players could just be like, well, it doesn't matter anyway. Yeah. Just something to think about when we watch the next game.
Yeah, for sure. Look, as dismayed as we may be about the season, at the end of the day, Alabama did get the win this week, 30-24.
Yeah. World's still
over
turning.
Ole Miss. The world is still turning, and things are really turning elsewhere in college football. When we come back from the break, we've got so much to talk about, especially in the Pac-12. Two huge upsets last night. We'll see you after the break.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back in here to the College Football Wrap-Up Show here on 90.7 Capstone. Look, it was a fantastic Saturday for college football. We had some huge upsets, some big games. But first, we got to get into it. It was probably the highlight game of the week for just about everyone, except maybe here in Alabama watching the Ole Miss game. But a game that really did matter when it comes to the playoffs. Number 4 TCU at number 18 Texas. TCU goes in and gets it done 17-10. How about them Horned Frogs? I got to say that. You know, full bias disclosure. I almost went to TCU. You know, we were talking about this during the break. On our Saturday morning show appearance, which we usually don't do, we talked about how if you're an elite program, you're supposed to have elite home field advantage. And Texas doesn't have that. Texas is, in fact, not back. I can't confirm. But this game just had Texas written all over it, did it not?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Texas with the home field favored by 7, this was your chance to kind of show yourself that even if like this year you weren't going to, you know, be in the playoff, you know, you still had a chance at getting to that Big 12 championship game. You were there to show everybody that you're on the right track. And, you know, it was a very close game. You lost 17-10. But it was just one of those where it's like you're watching it and you're like, man, I thought, you know, Texas with Steve Sarkisian, Quinn Ewers, Bijan Robinson, like these are the games you're supposed to show up and show like how good your offense is. And, you know, Quinn Ewers, 17 of 39, 171 yards, no touchdowns, the one interception. Bijan Robinson, who everybody thinks is the best, you know, running back in the Big 12, only 12 carries for 29 yards. And then, you know, I think TCU, you know, they still have those playoff hopes, you know, that they're trying to keep alive. And I think everybody thinks with the perception of the Big 12, they need to go undefeated to make it to the playoff. So, you know, good for them to stay undefeated. But it's just real disappointing for a lot of those Texas fans who were, like, hoping to see, you know, more progression in, you know, this year with Steve Sarkisian. But, you know, now they're going to be back to maybe next year.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting, though, looking at TCU and Texas playing each other. Since 2014, Texas has only beaten TCU twice, including this year. And, like, it's kind of remarkable. It's these score lines, 48-10 TCU, 50-7, 31-9, 24-7. So I guess in hindsight, I guess Texas kept it close this year, you know, when if they hadn't won it. But, yeah, it's just – yeah, I think this was, like you guys kind of talked about, this was kind of the big marquee Texas game, you know, under the lights, you know, it was, you know, hyped up ESPN's college football primetime game, and against TCU at home, you know, trying to pretty much end TCU's playoff hopes, get a one up on us in state school, and Quinn Ewers, you know, goes out and gets a 21 QBR, and Bijan Robinson can't run the ball, and TCU's defense is like stifling Texas, and just kind of a almost like a remarkable showing by the Longhorns with how inefficient. It seems like no one in Texas can score points this year. You know, A&M struggles, Texas struggles. Yeah, even TCU struggled this game. I mean,
another thing to kind of think about, you know, Texas after this disappointing game, how will their team respond going into next week? Next week they play Kansas.
In Kansas,
if you're not aware, I believe Kansas had only had two conference wins in the last like five seasons before this year, both against Texas. They beat them in Lawrence, Kansas in 2016, 24-21, and then they actually beat them in Austin, Texas last year, 57-56 in overtime. Can Kansas make it two in a row against the Longhorns team that, kind of like Alabama, now that they're most likely out of that Big 12 championship, how will their team respond?
Yeah, it is interesting. Sorry to cut you off.
That would be just hilarious if they were to lose to Kansas.
I mean, since 1901, Kansas has beaten Texas four times.
and twice in the last, you know, six years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so look, I mean, this is just classic Texas. You know, people like to make fun of the Cowboys, but who you really should be making fun of is the Texas Longhorns. Because they are, man, it was just so tough. They've got this big game. Oh, they've got the chance to kill TCU's playoff hopes. TCU's coming in undefeated. They're the kings of the Big 12. You know, who expected that? And Texas has got this. They've got everything going for them. They got Bijan. He's fully healthy. Quinn Ewers is back. He's been in things for a couple games. They got everything. They got College Game Day. They got Jordan Spieth picking the Longhorns. You know, everything goes correctly. And then you come out and you just, to be frank, stink it up. I mean, it... Yeah. For one thing, is Quinn Ewers really that good? Because, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I know that everybody says we should have lost that game at the beginning of the year, but I don't know if Quinn Ewers is that guy. Well, it's certainly not to what everybody was hyping him up to be.
I think it'll be interesting next year when they bring in Arch Manning and the question surrounding Quinn Ewers. Because in reality, like, you know, he was... You know, Arch Manning, you know, a couple of years ago, like he had all the hype, went to Ohio State, transferred to Texas, got an opportunity to start, and obviously, you know, he got hurt and, you know, they lost a couple games. But I think that's a serious question that, you know, these people are happening, that it's a serious conversation that's actually happening. I mean, he's throwing the ball only 212 times, but he's 55% completion, 13 touchdowns, 6 picks. And just not, you know, not the best maybe player that they had. And I get that he's like a freshman and you know, they're going to make mistakes. But he's like the most veteran freshman, I think, in college football. Because he had was in Ohio State practices for a whole year, transferred to Texas, had a whole summer with them. Like, this is not like, you know, a guy coming in out of the blue, you know, didn't even get to play in the spring game. So... You know, you're going to give him a season to grow. Like, he's been there, and, you know, to throw no touchdowns, throw a pick, 171 yards, and it was almost like a, maybe not a season defining game for Texas, but certainly one of their biggest of the year, was just almost inexcusable.
Yeah, I like Quinn Ewers. I think he's a good quarterback. One question coming into this year, I believe he hadn't really played football in about 2 years coming into this year. I believe his senior year of high school, he was hurt and couldn't play a lot. But if you're looking back at that Alabama game, where that was, he hadn't played, you know, the best the first couple weeks, and then Alabama comes into town. And he, before he gets hurt, he's 9 of 12 for 134 yards. And that's kind of what we expected, you know, once he came back from injury. And there's been games where he's looked like that again, but then almost in every like big game, it seems like he kind of shrinks to the moment. And I don't know if this has, anything to do with his injury from earlier in the year, or if he's going to be one of those guys that starts off looking great and then kind of fades into the background. Because if you look at quarterback performances against Alabama, you almost always have those miraculous performances where it's like, this is a one lifetime. Like, I know Johnny Manziel back in 2012, he had like his coming out game against us. He actually, you know, kept it going after us. But if you look back last year at the Texas A&M game with their quarterback, you know, it was like, I think he would start off the season third string, couple injuries, he's in the game, he has, you know, the game of his career against us, and then, you know, now he's a backup at Auburn. So
yeah, it is interesting to kind of go off that point you made about him and these big games. So looking at just his game by game breakdown, he obviously 9-for-12 against Alabama, played really well against Oklahoma and Iowa State, 7 touchdowns, 1 pick in those, you know, combined in those two games. But then since then, he's had at Oklahoma State, at Kansas State, TCU at home, and he hasn't completed more than 58% of his passes. He's thrown 4 picks in those 3 games and 4 touchdowns in those 3 games. And these are, I believe, not quite back-to-back-to-back weeks, but, you know, just, you know, those games are, I mean, you know, he had a 38% completion percentage against Oklahoma State, you know, like 19 of 49. So I think Texas, maybe you give him a year, like we said, and you know, like you kind of alluded to, Adam, like, I don't, is that Alabama game really what he is or just what he was on that day? And so I don't know. I think, Quint, there's going to be a lot of questions, especially with a guy like Steve Sarkisian who can get really good quarterback performance. I mean, he got Mac Jones to the Patriots, you know, almost pretty much with his scheme. So, you know, for a quarterback to not succeed in that style and that system is really surprising. So
I know if people have been talking all year about, you know, Jimbo and his buyout. If any Texas fans are thinking about buying out Steve Sarkisian and firing him in his second year, I know one team that would be glad to have him back as their offensive coordinator.
Yes.
Wouldn't we ever? You know, look, as bad as Quinn Ewers did play, and as mid as I may believe he is, you have to credit TCU's defense. The one question around this TCU team all year has been their defense. Will their defense show up? Can they show up? And they really did. They held Bijan Robinson to 29 yards. They gave up under 200 yards on the night, and then obviously had forced Quinn Ewers into having a horrible night. So big credit to them. You know who didn't show up? That the Texas Longhorns defense, especially on that one play where I think they gave up basically a free touchdown, uncovered route to the end zone, which was just, you know, it screamed Texas. They did have a chance to win it late after TCU had a horrible fumble. They take it back for the touchdown, but then TCU just runs all over the Longhorns to close out the game. So, good win for TCU. Their playoff hopes are still alive for sure, and they certainly control their own destiny. They clinch a spot in the Big 12 title game. We definitely got to get to the Pac-12. Bo Nix and the Oregon Ducks, a tough defeat. They lose to the Washington Huskies 37-34. Bo Nix had a chance on the last drive. I thought he was going to get it done, but that final Hail Mary pass came up probably 20 yards short.
Yeah, a couple of
yards. So we talked about it, you know, in our preview Saturday that we were filling in on, and we both expected Oregon to win this game. You know, they probably have the best home field in the Pac-12, and, you know, it was a great game to watch. I'm still shocked Oregon lost the game. If you just, you know, if you watched it, or if you just like looking at the stats, you know, Bo Nix, 19 of 27, 208 yards, 2 touchdowns. Bucky Irving led Oregon in rushing with 19 carries for 143 yards. Noah Whittington had 20 carries for 108 yards, 1 touchdown. And Bo Nix, the third leading rusher, 9 carries, 59 yards, 1 touchdown. They were playing out of their mind offensively, but their defense, who had been showing up in multiple games, did not show up in this one. They let Michael Penix Jr., quarterback for Washington, 26 of 35, 408 yards, 2 touchdowns. They did have the 1 interception, but even after all that, Oregon should have won the game. And to me, it all comes down to one coaching decision to go for it on fourth down while Bo Nix is on the sideline getting checked out for his injury. I think they have a better chance if they just punt the ball away in that situation, and then we would still be talking about a one-loss Oregon team potentially making it to the playoff. But with the second loss, I think that kind of, even if they go on to win the Pac-12, I don't think they can get into the playoff now.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of chaos coming in the Pac-12, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, especially like when it comes to playoff contention. But look, the TCU-Texas game was kind of a mid-off of quarterbacks. Both of them, neither of them played well. They both had, I think, Max Duggan had like a 31 QBR, yeah. And I know that Quinn Ewers was way worse than that. But in this game, Michael Penix Jr., 93.9, and then Bo Nix puts up a 90.9 on the other side. This was a great quarterback battle. As somebody who was rooting for Bo Nix to kind of get Oregon to the playoffs, it's tough to see them go down. I thought they were going to pull it out at the end, man. I really did. I think if they had, 30 more seconds, they probably win the game.
As I'm, we've talked a couple times on this show, and then we talked about it Saturday morning about how Bo Nix, with his stats, could be a potential Heisman finalist. That was his moment. Getting the ball back, coming back on the field from injury. If he completes that drive, you could be looking back at that being his Heisman moment. Now, it doesn't look like he will win it. I think he'll still be a finalist.
Yeah, unfortunately, that last throw comes up 20 yards short. That was a tough one.
Yeah, it is also interesting, just kind of as a side note to this game, Washington, by winning the game, Oregon, they ended Oregon's 23-game home winning streak. The last time they lost at home was Stanford in 2018, and if that doesn't show maybe just how impressive that Washington win was. I think Washington, to be honest, they had that big win, I believe, against Michigan State, and everybody thought they were going to be really good. And then they lost twice to UCLA and Arizona State and just kind of got written off, and because they weren't really going to – they might not have won the Pac-12, and they weren't definitely not going to go to the playoffs or anything like that. But, this is a team that, has won four straight games. They're going to play Colorado, so, that's the equivalent of like a Vandy game almost, as much as I actually like and respect Colorado. They have a very good chance of finishing this year with 9, maybe 10 wins. And it's kind of impressive the way that they were. Oregon, to be fair, did almost hand it to them. Well, they handed it to the running back who then handed it to Washington. But, just credit to the Huskies. Fought hard, played hard, and, good win for them.
Yeah, this was a great battle, a great game, like I said.
Flipping between this and the TCU-Texas game was like watching something I never thought I'd see.
Elsewhere in the Pac-12, another huge upset, a team that a lot of people that, you were looking at potentially, maybe even they had title hopes. But UCLA loses to Arizona 34-28. I think it's hard to describe how bad of a loss this is for UCLA.
And they didn't play, terrible, but Arizona's Arizona. That was their fourth win of the year. They're 2-5 in the conference. If you really wanted to, show, the national media, the playoff committee, and, one of the guys in this room who doesn't really like UCLA, that being me, you needed to win out. And you needed to win, the Pac-12. But Arizona, that's the game you did not – I kind of expected them to probably lose to USC. Now, they might beat USC. They, they've looked better. But, this game, they gave up Arizona's quarterback, Jaden Delora, 22 of 28, 315 yards and 2 touchdowns. Now, UCLA, they played, pretty well offensively in this game. But they just couldn't get it done against Arizona, and that, a second loss in the Pac-12 and one of those losses now being Arizona, your title hopes are pretty much done.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people really saw this coming, even though Arizona was having a I mean, not a bad season by their standards. You know, this team went 1-11 last year, was 0-5 in the COVID year. Like, they've had like almost less wins than Kansas over the past couple years. So, you know, for them to go and beat UCLA, I know it's not really exactly a great home field advantage, but for them to do that, you know, good for them. But yeah, UCLA, I mean, this is just a game you can't lose. Like, this was, you know, for them, like, even if maybe they weren't going to make the playoffs anyway as like an 11-1 team, like, you still should beat Arizona. You know, going to the USC game with it being maybe a top 10 matchup potentially.
You know, I think another thing this loss does, other than hurt UCLA's title hopes, this could hurt the Pac-12's title hopes in general, because now when you say, you know, UCLA's, you know, one of the top teams in the Pac-12, and then they lose to Arizona. And I know upsets happen all the time, but when you're having to have a committee, you know, say, you know, this Pac-12 champion should be in, but then you start going along with, you know, who's in the Pac-12 and, you know, their losses. Like, so right now, if USC, you know, they only have the one loss. If they win the Pac-12 and they do beat UCLA, how good does that UCLA win look to the committee? And I just don't know how the committee is going to value the Pac-12 after this.
Yeah, and the Pac-12, like, we've got a crazy scenario coming up this next week. The Pac-12 actually, interestingly, just this year changed the way that their championship game works. Before, I think they had two divisions.
Yes.
And now it's just the two teams with the highest conference winning percentage play.
I think they still have the divisions for like scheduling purposes, but, you know, they just take the top two teams no matter what.
Right. Yeah. And so you've got a crazy situation upcoming here. You know, you have USC with one in conference loss, Oregon with one in conference loss, Utah with one in conference loss, who's looked a lot better. And then UCLA at 5-2, Washington at 5-2, and I believe, I think it's what, USC, UCLA next week, and then Oregon, Utah playing as well. I mean, we're going to find out.
And I do think the only hope for the Pac-12 to get into the playoff now is USC. If USC doesn't win it with that one, like, if you have a two-loss Pac-12 champion, like, because Utah, you know, they lost to Florida week one. I know it's week one, but that's going to be very hard to convince a committee of a two-loss Pac-12 champion.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll ask you right now, who do we think is going to end up playing in the Pac-12 championship game?
I'm going to go with Oregon and USC.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's hard to pick because, like, I think Utah potentially. I mean, Oregon and Utah play each other next week, so I guess the winner of that. But, you know, I'll go, since it's at Oregon, I'll go Oregon to win and USC Oregon.
Yeah,
it'll be real interesting if Oregon does win next week, but then they have Oregon State, who has been a very tough team this year, almost beating Washington a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And that one, I believe, is in Corvallis at Oregon State. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, you know, honestly, it's not like super exciting, but I definitely do think it'll be USC and Oregon, although Utah has a like really, really good chance of beating Oregon. You know, I want Oregon to be in the Pac-12 championship game purely to spoil USC's potential playoff hope, because I don't think they're that good. Spoiler alert. Kind of a Pac-12 hater, except for Oregon. I've kind of realized that.
I still watch the Pac-12 all the time. I'll watch it even if nobody else does. But Oregon, you know,
if they have one fan, it's him.
Look, I guess I'm kind of, you know, biased to him. Like, you know, there's some teams that I don't like in the Pac-12. Like, I don't really like UCLA this year. We discussed that on this show, you know, a couple weeks ago. But when I was, you know, young, when I was first getting into the football, you know, the king of college football was like USC. You know, that's with Reggie Bush and Lindell White. So, like, I, you know, grew up with the Pac-12 being a very good conference. And, you know, now they might not be as good. They haven't had a playoff team since 2016 when Washington made it. But, you know, I still like that late night Pac-12 game when, you know, everybody else is done watching. And I'm like, I'm going to stay up and watch this, you know, 37-34 game.
Yeah, 2 a.m. Just yeah. Washington State, Oregon State battling it out. Nothing better.
It's great.
Also, I think just to not, I don't want to take you over the hosting chair by any means, but I will get quick shout out. We'll go back to the SEC. Vanderbilt winning a conference game, upsetting Kentucky, who's probably moved on to basketball season already, but I think it was like 26 games. A 26 SEC game losing streak for Vanderbilt. So.
But guys, Kentucky's going to be so good in football this year.
Levis is QB1.
You know, I'm still shocked at that game. And you know, especially looking at how Kentucky was playing earlier in the season. These last weeks have been
Will miserable. Levis with a nice 15.5 QBR.
It's okay. If he gets drafted before Bryce Young, I will riot.
Those are the intangibles.
When we come back, we're going to take one more break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up here on the College Football Wrap-Up Show here on 90.7 The Cap Zone. Stay with us.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back in, folks, to our final 10 minutes or so. We're probably going to end up going over, as it seems we do almost every week.
Yes.
We're vouching for the two-hour time slot. But we're going to finish things up here. We're going to kind of go through some of the teams just outside the playoff, just inside the playoff, and we're going to say, are they dead or not? Obviously referring to their chances to go to the college football playoff, and this is completely opinion. We're not speaking like dead as in like they have literally no shot, but in your opinion, do they still have a chance? And we'll start with probably the most interesting one. Number 5 Tennessee, they're 9-1. They will get left out of the SEC title game. Are they dead or not?
You know, I think they're very much alive, but I think their hope is that Georgia goes undefeated and wins that SEC title, because then you can make the case for two SEC teams. If LSU goes on to win the title, and then they get in because they beat the number one team, and then you're probably going to have, you know, LSU and then Georgia, and then I don't think the committee can talk itself into putting three SEC teams in. So Tennessee's best hope for me is just Georgia win out, and then, you know, Ohio State, Michigan, they're at 2 and 3. They're going to play each other. The loser's probably going to get left out of there too. So you'll have one spot that needs to be filled, and with how the Pac-12 looks, it doesn't look like they're going to take a spot. So I think they are very much alive, but they need Georgia to win that title game.
Yeah, no, Tennessee, just for the reasons you just said, they're definitely not dead. They still, you know, it's out of their hands now. I mean, they, you know, obviously, well, they have to win, I guess, the next two games. But assuming they do that, you know, they're definitely not dead. I mean, there's still a very realistic chance that they get in if, like you said, Georgia wins, especially if they, like, not that, you know, it might matter, but, you know, it's like if they blow out LSU and then Tennessee's, you know, maybe, how much did they lose to them by?
Like, the final score was 14, but, you know, it didn't look that good.
It didn't look good, but, you know, on paper you're looking, okay, maybe Georgia beats LSU by like 30. So you're like, okay, Tennessee losing to them by 15, not so bad. You can put them in. You know, especially because Ohio State, Michigan are going to play each other. One of those teams might knock each other out. So Tennessee's still very much in.
Yeah, I think out of all the teams that we're going to talk about today, I'd say Tennessee probably has the best shot, because either Ohio State or Michigan is going to get left out. And I think that I could argue personally all day for Tennessee being in over either one of those Big Ten teams, just because, I mean, I think the SEC, like, an SEC schedule is so much harder than a Big Ten schedule, in my opinion.
Iowa going to Indianapolis.
Tennessee is definitely not dead when it comes to the playoff hopes, but they need LSU to get blown out, like, big time. If it, like, I mean, obviously LSU's got to win to get in, but that would be the nightmare scenario for Tennessee, is LSU winning. So right after that, we'll jump straight into them. LSU, are they dead or not?
I think they're still alive, but obviously they need to win out. You know, they still have that Texas A&M game, which they should win, but they've already locked up the SEC West. So does that affect how they play in that game? Does Texas A&M, you know, rally around Jimbo and, you know, get one upset, you know, this year? But you know, if they win out and then they go into Atlanta and beat Georgia, I don't think they'll get left out by being the SEC champion, like you said, with the toughness of the SEC, with how that perception is with the committee. I think LSU would still get in by beating Georgia. But then, like I said earlier, that would mess things up for everybody else, because then Georgia's probably going to still get in. Tennessee probably left out. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, no, LSU still's got a chance. They just have to do the incredible task of beating Georgia in Atlanta. And if they can do that, then I'm sure they'll get in. So it's as simple as that for them. They got to beat whoever they play next week. I think it's UAB. And then beat A&M and beat Georgia. So, simple.
I'll say it. LSU's dead. Coming off that huge win against Alabama, LSU just looked like, oh, they're so good, they're back, oh, this team looks so good. And then they play Arkansas, and if I'm being honest, they should have lost this game.
Arkansas's,
I mean,
backup QB too.
Jaden Daniels, I thought this was a joke. He had a 9.7 QBR. Yeah. I mean, we thought we had some bad ones earlier, but 9.7 might be the record.
You know, 30 minutes before the game, it gets announced KJ Jefferson for Arkansas will not play in the game. I think if he plays in the game, Arkansas wins.
For sure.
But, you know, once it seems like all these games that where it should have went one way or the other, it's always these fourth down calls. Because Arkansas went for it on fourth down very early in that game when they could have settled for a field goal. They lose by three. Oregon with their calls. Ole Miss with their fourth down calls. I know the last one they had to go for, the last two they had to go for, but that one, I think it was the first drive of the game. But, you know, Arkansas should have won that game. I just think with how the committee views the SEC, they're still alive. But that is a very good point right there.
Yeah, I mean, it was a close game, and they did win, which is, like, really, at the end of the day, the only thing that matters, right? It's win and, like, survive in advance. But, I mean, they're going to play – it's going to be another close game against Texas A&M. And I'm sorry, but if that LSU plays like they did last night, they are going to get rolled
by
Georgia.
Can't wait to see the QB numbers from that game.
Yeah. I'm going to say they're dead. USC, they're 9-1. Currently, I believe, tied for the lead in the Pac-12. Are they dead or not?
I think they are. I've been one of the few guys on the show that actually have liked USC this year. But I don't think they really have a chance to get into the playoff unless they get a lot of help. If they finish out the season with one loss, Pac-12 champ, they could make a case for it. But right now, you know, they're 9-1, but they still have them behind the two loss LSU, you know. Obviously, TCU still, like, they're behind a lot of undefeateds, and then, you know, Tennessee only has one loss, but they have them below Tennessee and LSU, and then Alabama's right behind them. You know, the committee's already kind of saying we don't really respect the Pac-12, you know, schedule with, you know, who's lost to who. So I don't think, even if they win, they can just get in by winning the Pac-12. I think they need a lot of help. They need, you know, TCU to lose, or, you know, maybe Ohio State and Michigan to lose, maybe. I don't know, but I don't think they're getting into the playoff.
Yeah, I will agree with you. I don't think they're going to get in, even if they do win out and win the Pac-12, unless, I mean, like, Michigan, Ohio State, TCU all lose, you know, a couple of games, to be honest. Because, I mean, even, you know, they're 9-1, which is a good record, but if you look at, you know, a couple of these games, they beat Arizona by, you know, 8, which I guess maybe now is a good win. You know, Cal by 6. You know, they're one. The one ranked team they played so far this season, they lost to, which was Utah. So,
you know, it'll be very interesting because USC still has to play Notre Dame, and Notre Dame, you know, beat Clemson. And, you know, Clemson, if they finish with that one loss, I can almost see the committee jumping them over USC, even with that blowout loss to Notre Dame, just with how they view the Pac-12. But how does USC play when they play Notre Dame in a couple weeks?
Yeah, I'm going to say USC's dead. I think that there's kind of a nightmare scenario brewing in the Pac-12 where I think Oregon's going to win the Pac-12, and then USC kind of, you know, they're 9-2, never really have it. And it turns out nobody from the Pac-12 even had a real shot to make it. It's simple enough to me. I don't think USC's that good. I think Oregon is a world better than them.
They can't enter like a resume contest.
For sure. No.
Yeah, like, they can't do that.
They literally have to be looking at they are a champion and they only have one loss and everybody else has one loss. So they would have to put them in solely on conference champion status.
Yeah, I don't even know if they meet the minimum standards required to enter the hypothetical resume contest. I think they would get rejected immediately.
They would probably get...
By the Baja.
I mean, look, if you look at the top 10, you know, I don't think they have a better resume than anybody in the top 10 right now. It would literally have to be champion, and then hopefully these last couple of games they, you know, blow everybody out. That would be what they would need, and probably still need a little bit of help.
Yeah. Here's a fun one. We'll kind of do a 2-1. The hypothetical ACC champ, Clemson or North Carolina, are they dead?
I think they're both dead. Kind of like how I was saying with USC, you know, they're going to need a lot of help. Clemson has a better shot because they are still in the top 10. I would have liked, you know, them to play a little closer with Notre Dame to really have a shot. I don't think North Carolina has any shot at all, even though I ran through a scenario, you know, Saturday, how North Carolina could get in there. But I think, you know, their biggest win will end up being, they also lost Notre Dame, but their biggest win will have been Clemson. If Clemson was still undefeated and then they beat Clemson, maybe they jump all the way up there. I think they're both dead. I just, can the committee, like we were talking, you know, if Oregon, if they had one loss, would the committee be able to overlook that 49-3 loss? I know it wasn't a 49-3 loss to Notre Dame that Clemson had, but it was still bad. And I don't think that late in the a loss that late in the season by that margin, I don't think the committee can put Clemson in.
I don't want to say they're dead, but they're like on life support at this point. Like I think North Carolina might be. I don't know if Clemson is officially dead. I think North Carolina might be simply because unless they beat Clemson, obviously I think maybe the winner of the game might be might have a chance. But you know, UNC doesn't quite have a good win. You know, the loss came to Notre Dame. They haven't beaten a ranked team. Clemson, you know, if you look at their schedule, they've beaten, you know, Wake Forest on the road, NC State on the road, Syracuse on the road, and you know, for the most part, I mean, I think if they can win maybe the ACC, if they could blow out North Carolina, I think maybe there's a shot. I mean, you know, North Carolina is 9-1 and they're ranked behind Penn State and Oregon and Utah, you know, and Alabama, and you know, they're 13th in the AP poll, which I know isn't the playoff committee rankings, but you know, just now, to kind of give a sense.
I would love it if chaos happened and North Carolina somehow got in. I would love that, but yeah. You know, I don't see it.
I don't think it's happening, and I think Clemson out of those two has maybe the most life left, but it would be hard for you know, them to put in like a Clemson or North Carolina over some of these other teams, especially with the resumes that these teams have. So,
you know, I'm going to say not dead yet. Okay, and I would say that North Carolina is less dead than Clemson, surprisingly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the big thing for him is how well Drake May has played. Yes, some people are 100%. Talking about him for a Heisman.
Yeah, he's looked fantastic. He threw for 448 yards in the last game. But, I mean, it's tough. We're really going to find out, like, if one of these teams has one loss, they're the ACC champion, how much does the playoff committee really value that championship? Like, is there a chance that they get in over a team that doesn't have a conference championship? I mean, could you imagine the scene if a one-loss Clemson team that was the ACC champion got in over, like, Tennessee
or
it would be a...
Or the loser of the Ohio State Michigan game. That could also be a conversation to be had. you know, it would be crazy if we're talking about all this and then all of a sudden, you know, Tennessee loses to like Vanderbilt and then they don't get in. But I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, it'll be interesting just to kind of see what this committee values more.
Well, I mean, Vandy's arrived. They're here to stay.
Vandy is back.
I mean, like, and I look at this UNC schedule and God, it's so bad.
It's really bad.
It's so bad. Florida A&M, App State, 2-point win.
Now, the App State 2-point win was before App State took down the juggernaut that is Texas A&M.
That is true. They beat Miami by 3 points. 3-point win against Duke.
The thing that they do have good for them is they played Notre Dame closer than Clemson.
This is true. And they will still play a ranked NC State team that's not as good as anybody thought it was, but they are still ranked. And they will play Clemson. If they could maybe blow out those last two games, Drake May looks amazing, they win the ACC, maybe there's a 1 in 1,000 shot.
And I am definitely going to be going for North Carolina in all those games.
It's
going to
be interesting.
I would love it if North Carolina made it.
Oh, the Tennessee fans would be so upset. I don't think it's going to happen. It would be unbelievable. Could you imagine like that ACC team gets... Well, I mean, I don't know how you could really make the argument for them over like a one-loss TCU that's still won the Big 12.
I still don't think they get in, but
it's crazy.
You know,
they're not dead.
I like chaos.
They're not dead.
Yeah.
So now, real quick, we've gone way over, but we're going to go through. We're going to do four picks, rapid fire. So first up, Oregon, Utah. Who wins that game?
Oregon.
I'll also say Oregon. USC, UCLA. Who wins that?
USC.
Yeah, same here. Illinois, Michigan.
Michigan.
Yeah, it's at Michigan, right?
I don't care
where that game is at. Michigan's winning that game.
Then, yeah, Michigan.
Yeah, I'll say Michigan as well. And I think it's going to be, we're going to have the exact same picks, Georgia, Kentucky.
Oh, dear God.
Will Levis shock the world.
I think at this point in the season, Georgia has shown that they are the number one team with how they played the last couple of weeks. No matter how poorly they played early in the year, I think Georgia has finally gotten to that, you know, final form. And I think Georgia's going to win this game
pretty easily.
So, yeah, Georgia's gonna steamroll.
I do want to give quick shout out before we end. UConn Huskies football team got bowl eligible. They're 6-5
by beating Liberty, who just beat Arkansas.
And they have not. So for reference, UConn has not finished the year with a winning season since 2010 when they were in the Big East.
Yeah.
That's not a football conference anymore. They finished 8-5 that year, and Randy Etzel was their coach, and their past couple of seasons, this year they're 6-5, 1-11 last year. They didn't play COVID year, 2-10, 1-11, 3-9, 3-9, 2015, 6-7, and then it was 2-10, 3-9, 5-7, 5-7, 8-5 was the last winning record. Congrats to the Huskies.
How about them Huskies?
Enjoy the bowl game in the Bahamas. Or wherever they sign.
Hopefully they don't end up in the Birmingham Bowl. That would be the
I might go to that. I'll be their only fan.
Also, I would be so remiss if I let this whole show pass and I did not have some Aggie slander. Texas A&M is officially the first college football program ever to follow up a number one recruiting class with losing season.
Does UMass beat them? Do the Minutemen?
Could you imagine?
Do the Minutemen beat the Aggies? They're actually, it's funny, on ESPN's matchup predictor, the UMass likelihood has jumped a whole percent. It was 0.4. It's now 1.4. So the 1-9 Minutemen might shock the world.
Let's go UMass.
Okay. A&M boosters, show me the money. Come on, 90 mil.
If UMass does beat Texas A&M, Jimbo's fired before the game's over.
Before he gets out of the game. He's getting the Herm Edwards, game's over, president's in the end zone, shaking his hand, saying, hey, it's been a good run. We'll see. We'll always remember that fifth place finish in the COVID year.
Could you imagine?
Be great.
All right, folks. Well, that'll do it for us here this week on 90.7 The Capstone with our college football wrap-up. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.